Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome in, friends, to another episode of RNIB Tech Talk, where we gather around each week to explore the world of technology from a blindness or low vision perspective. We're always keen to hear from you. If you've got some technology that's doing something it should or shouldn't, we want to hear about it. TechTalk at rnib.org.uk. T-E-C-H-T-A-L-K at rnib.org.uk. Coming up this week, we'll be thinking all about wearable technology. David Hogg has been hearing about a new pair of smart glasses that the manufacturer claims may one day replace a guide dog. Hubert Pavalkovich, well, he tries out the OpenCom 2 bone conduction headphones from Shox, and we'll be chatting with Sony about their LinkBuds in-ear earphones. That's all to come this time on Tech Talk. Joining us are our co-hosts, Callum Stoneman, Hubert Pavalkovich, Jackie Brown and Natalie Curran. Welcome in to you all. Let's just pop around the room and find out what's happening in your world where technology is concerned this week. Callum, let's come to you first.
So there's a new app available for those social media fans out there. So this app is called Tapestry, and it's designed to combine all your social media feeds as well as RSS feeds and podcasts and YouTube channels. It's designed to combine those all into one easy to use app and one easy to browse timeline. And this is from the company Icon Factory, who've got a brilliant track record of accessibility. So they developed the really popular Twitterific app back in the day before it was unceremoniously had the plug pulled on it. But this is their latest app, and I've had a bit of a play with it. It's only been launched a couple of days ago at the time of recording, but it seems pretty nice, really accessible as you'd expect. And it just brings, I guess what they're trying to get away from is, or what they're trying to help with, is this kind of fragmented approach that we've got now with social media, especially since the controversy at X and other platforms. You've got some people are on Mastodon, some people are on Blue Sky, some people are on Threads, and some people have just got their own blogs that you can get through RSS, or some people are on YouTube, and it's just trying to bring those all together, really. So I don't have to go to one app to look at Hubert's things, and then another app to look at Dave's posts, and then another app to look. It's just all there. So you add those all in, and it all just appears.
You don't look at Dave's post. This isn't going to work with all social media networks, though, is it, Callum?
No, and that's the downside to these kind of apps. It works on the open social media platforms, so things like Mastodon and Blue Sky, and I think Threads. I haven't tried Threads, but I think it works with them. But your kind of, your bigger ones, I suppose. So, I mean, X, obviously, is a no-go. They don't allow any third-party apps. Things like Facebook and Instagram, they're too, you used to be able to get loads of third-party apps for those platforms, but they're just too closed in nowadays. So, I mean, that's not Icon Factory's fault. It's just there's nothing they can do to get support for those kind of bigger platforms, if you like.
Tapestry. All right, take it for a spin and let us know what you think. Hubert Pavalkovich, how are you, sir?
I'm very good. So, speaking of, you mentioned guide dogs. There's a new feature being, well, slowly rolled out here by ride-sharing service Uber. So this is only in America at the moment, but hopefully it'll be rolled out in the UK soon. And it's a good news for guide dog users, where you can actually now permanently identify yourself as a user of a service animal in account settings, which will then allow you to at least not have to kind of constantly worry that the driver won't know that you've got a service animal, and that way you can actually have a toggle there straight away, which helps to, well, let the drivers know what they're in for, basically, and what to expect when they arrive, which I quite like, because at the moment I just message my Uber driver as soon as I get one to say that I have a guide dog, just so they know, and you know, don't kind of drive off when they drive up, really. And so I find that quite useful as well. And also, if the driver does cancel a ride, once you have that toggle switched on, they will get a little pop-up going, what you've done is against the law, by the way, which is quite interesting.
This is a massive problem, isn't it? And of course, you know, I suppose Uber are trying to be helpful with this setting, but in areas where perhaps there are fewer drivers and you might get a situation where somebody doesn't accept a job because they see that you've got a guide dog, and then you're left with fewer options in terms of your onward travel. I mean, I've always taken the view that if I'm traveling with a guide dog, I don't have a guide dog, but if I'm in a group where there is a guide dog, I try to flag it for the taxi company because I just want to avoid that confrontation, even though, you know, you are legally required as a driver to accept assistance dogs unless you've got some sort of medical exemption.
Absolutely. And the problem that I do exactly the same for very much the same reason, because it helps to avoid, because when they drive up and then there's that confrontation, that's the worst feeling. And I've had it before, and it can be quite upsetting at the time. And, you know, yes, drivers do have medical exemptions, although some drivers refuse to get one and then they're surprised that, you know, they're not feeling well when they have a dog in the car. But that's by the by. You know, I think it's a nice little thing to kind of flag that you've got a guide dog without kind of constantly having to type out the same message over and over again.
Well, we will see how that one lands. Be keen to hear about you. Have you found any good strategies, particularly with the ride-sharing services? Jackie Brown, what's on your tech table this week?
I have been given the loan of the new Hims Braille eMotion this week, which is sitting on my toy table. So I have been having a play with that and taking it through its paces. So watch this space, guys, for maybe a more in-depth review. But yes, so far, so very nice.
Yeah, I heard about this device from Jenny Axler earlier last year. I think we recorded a little bit of an interview. And then I saw a Braille eMotion at an event recently, but it wasn't charged. I hope yours is charged, Jackie, and look forward to that review.
Yeah, it was quite dead when it arrived, but it is charged. And actually, it does hold the charge really, really well. You know, it's got a really good battery life. But as I say, I will be putting a review together, and we can find out more about it then.
Brilliant. Okay, looking forward to that. And finally, Natalie, let's come to you. What's grabbing your attention in the world of technology this time?
I didn't strictly notice it this week, but it's something I've forgotten about before. And it's a new feature on Microsoft Excel. I know for some people, Excel is just a headache, whether you can see or not. Personally, I'm a bit of a geek, so I quite like it. But if you're using Excel to turn a table of numbers into a chart or a graphic for a visual presentation, normally that would be inaccessible to somebody using a screen reader. But now, if that chart stays in Excel, unfortunately it doesn't work if you copy and paste elsewhere, but if it stays in Excel, you can now explode it using a keyboard and have, in this case I was using JAWS, have JAWS read it out to you. So, for example, I created a table, and this is how I discovered it, for a number of people working in different roles at a company. And I created this chart not expecting to be able to do anything with it, but I tabbed to it because Excel says there's an object on the screen. So I tabbed to it, and I found that I could add along the different axes. It was a very simple chart, and it said engineers, 14, designers, 20, project managers, 30 or whatever it was, which I thought was really cool and not something that I'd heard mentioned before or since.
More project managers than engineers. When did that ever happen?
I'm making numbers up here, David. I have no idea what the numbers were.
Natalie, is this an Excel feature or is this a JAWS feature?
Well, I think it's Excel. I could be wrong. It might have been JAWS, but I assumed it was Excel, and I believe it to be Excel, because if it was JAWS, I imagine it would work more widely. But it was just within Excel, which I still thought was a very cool feature, very handy.
Yeah.
So at least I knew when I copied and pasted that chart across to a presentation, I knew what it said, and I knew it was saying the right things, rather than just having to hope for the best.
Have you come across this, Callum?
No, I haven't. To be honest, I'm really not great with Excel. You said earlier about Excel just being a headache for some people, and it is for me. My wife is like the Excel ninja. She loves it. Oh, she absolutely loves Excel. She's got all the, she uses it for work quite a lot. So she loves doing all the formulas and getting, documents linked so that it changes based on what's in another document and all that. She's brilliant with it. I can just about do the basics.
It'd be good to hear about recommendations for screen reader training with Excel, because I think it is a little bit of a dark art, and sometimes people do struggle to get to grips with it. So any recommendations of resources, how to get the best out of it, particularly when it comes to some of those more graphical elements, would be good to hear about those. The thing that grabbed my attention this week is seeing AI. They've changed the layout. Anyone else spotted this?
That really threw me when I first went into that.
Yes.
I went into it just, the usual sort of thing. I got some post through, opened up Scene AI to read the mail, and all the my channels thing had gone. My channels slider. I'm like, what's going on here?
Yeah, so you've got three buttons now.
They've moved it into more of a tab kind of interface.
And yeah, I think you've got, is it read, describe, and more? Three buttons now when you go into Seeing AI. And if you press more, because the thing I was frustrated about, the main use case for me with Seeing AI is product identification. So, going in the cupboard and there's a sea of tins in there, and I want to scan the barcodes, so I like the product channel. So I usually go in, flick up twice, and there it is. And then bloop, 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 or whatever it does. And, it tells me I've got a mixed bean salad or something. All of that's hidden away behind the more button now. So that little control that you're familiar with is still there, but it's hidden behind the more button. So interested to hear what everyone's thoughts are about the changes to Seeing AI. Well, there we are. Callum Stoneman, Hubert Pavarkovic, Jackie Brown, and Natalie Curran. Thank you so much. Stick around. It's another Tech Talk. Audio, of course, is very important for many of us, especially those of us working in radio land. But blind and partially sighted people, we often have a collection of audio devices, headphones, and other equipment for capturing and reproducing audio. And one company that is at the forefront of making audio technology more accessible for blind and partially sighted people is Sony. And it's my pleasure to be back in Weybridge, this time joined by Mike Somerset, who is the Personal Entertainment Product Manager with Sony Europe. Mike, welcome into RNIB Connect Radio. Fantastic to be with you. Just tell me a little bit about your role and how you came to this role at Sony.
Well, thank you for having me. My role is a bit of an audio focused on product marketing. Okay, so my journey, I've been working for Sony for many, many years. My actual background before Sony was very much audio focused. I did that at uni and things like that. Throughout the years, I did different jobs with Sony until I landed on training. And when I did training, I started getting more into the audio, and my experience from university started paying off and all of these things that I'd learned. So since then, and this is since about 2010, I've done a few different jobs in Sony, but generally they're around the product. It's about how can we show to people what the products do? Can we really kind of get the messages out there? And right now I'm working for Sony Europe with the personal entertainment products, which basically means headphones, speakers, and things like that.
Brilliant. So you've been here a while, you know your way around. Give us a bit of an overview then, if you would, for those listeners who perhaps only remember the Sony Walkman. Just where are we at now in 2025? Just give us a bit of an overview of Sony's audio products.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. I mean, I think it's great that people often remember the Walkman and they talk about that, because actually, Sony is historically an audio brand. That's what we are. I mean, I know Sony make an enormous amount of things now, but actually, if you go right back, the first products, if you ignore a rice cooker or two, the first early Sony products were actually audio products. And I think a lot of people have that in their mind. And it's been the case over the years that we've sort of stayed at the forefront with that kind of audio technology. So now, in 2025, we're at the point when we have stunning amount of very good quality headphones. Just this morning, actually, I was looking at some of the data, and Sony are currently number one within Europe for sales for headband headsets, so over €100. So the more premium ones, number one. And so huge brand. But we also do, I mean, everything from speakers that you could that fit in the size of your in the palm of your hand, little Bluetooth speakers, all the way up to what I would call a party speaker, which is probably the size of your recycling bin. It's that big, you know. So lots of different things, and the old traditional things as well, clock radios, more exciting things such as neck band speakers. You know, there's quite a range of audio. What I would say though is, at the moment, the big focus from Sony, lots of different things, but at the moment, headphones is certainly something that I'm more involved with at the moment, anyway.
Right. So let's dig into headphones then. What do you perceive to be the benefits of Sony headphones in particular?
Yeah. Okay, there's a few different things. I always feel like with headphones, there's a few key factors to headphones that everyone knows about. Sound quality is a very important one. Comfort is very important because you wear them for a long period of time. And then you get these other very exciting features. So for example, noise cancelling and ambient sound. So noise cancelling, blocking out the world around you. Ambient sound, letting the world around you in so you can hear what's happening. Now, I think when you look at these particular areas, this is really where Sony has been super strong. More recently, the kind of flagship sort of sitting at the top of the Sony range has been this this line of headphones called the 1000X series. And that's been about sound quality, noise cancelling, which is the other side of the coin from transparent sound, ambient sound, and comfort and design. So I think that's really what sets the Sony headphones apart. We built a really exciting line, and I think a lot of customers have faith in these products. And yeah, they're really the focus.
Your in-ear earbuds are called Linkbuds.
Yes.
And they have a transparency listening mode. So you talked about letting the world around you in and also keeping the world out. So just talk us a little bit more about how does that work.
Right. Well, yeah, okay, great. So there's actually two. I've actually brought a pair here. So I have some Linkbuds Fit and Linkbuds Open. These are the two new models. So I'm just going to sort of describe the difference between these models. So the Linkbuds Fit is like almost a traditional earbud that fits in your ear. An earbud tip that would go into your ear, and then a sort of plastic bit that sits just on the inside. It's got a little sticking out bit which kind of holds it into the ear. So if you're moving around quickly, we call it an air fitting supporter. It holds it there. Now, in terms of your question about transparent mode, on the end of this, they've got a microphone. And this little microphone is so the best we have done so far in earbuds. In other words, it captures more of the surrounding world than ever before. So what that means is if you're wearing these and you activate noise cancelling mode, so you want to block everything out, it uses this microphone to capture the sound around you, and then, to get technical about it, inverse the noise and play you the anti-noise. What does that mean? It means it's literally cancelling out the sound that you can hear. It's very, very clever. But on the flip side, this microphone can also be used to hear what's going on around you. So when they're in your ear, the sound is coming from around you, it's going through the microphone, being processed by the earbuds and being played back to you. So these are very, very good for things like sport. Now, let me just now explain why the Linkbuds Open is a bit different, because I think this is a really cool design. So at first glance, these things have got a similar look to the Linkbuds Fit. You've got this little bit that sticks out to hold it in the ear. You've got the plastic bit that sits just inside the ear and just in front of the ear canal. The difference with this is it kind of looks like a sort of polo or like a Cheerio. It's like a little circular ring that goes in against the ear canal. And what that means is the sound travels from the world around you through the hole, so it goes directly in. So simply put, you can have these earbuds in without blocking anything out, and therefore you can stay very much aware of what's going on around you. there's a sort of design of these headphones is generally known at the moment as open ear headphones. So there's some different options out there. But Sony first did our open ear ones in 2021, off the top of my head, with the Link Buds. And this is the next second generation of it, the Link Buds Open. And yeah, I, like I say, I think it's a really exciting way of having, we say, connected to both worlds. In other words, you can have these earbuds in and you're connected to your online world, which is your phone and your music or your directions or whatever it is you're using, plus connected to the outside world. So you're not blocked out. You can still hear what's going on around you. Yeah, and it's just an exciting different way of doing things.
That open ear approach for transparent listening has particular benefits, I think, for blind and partially sighted people who sometimes rely on things like echolocation and even the slightest bit of latency that you might get with a digital approach to transparent listening can in certain circumstances be problematic. So that's a really interesting approach that you've got an earbud that fits snugly into your ear, but at the same time is giving you that analog of the outside world. So absolutely, that's the Link Buds Open.
That's the Link Buds Open. And like I said, I think these things are very, very personal kind of products because it's what is best for you and what fits in your ear. And I just think it's a nice, possibility for people to use something like this, like you say, whether it's walking through town while being able to listen to guidance, like while listening to music or whatever, and staying aware, or whether it's just, you know, sitting in an airport waiting for the right announcement to come over the airways.
Let's talk about ear health, because obviously for somebody who is blind or low vision, we rely a lot on our hearing, and many of us make extensive use of earphones and headphones. Just talk a little bit about Sony's approach to ear protection.
Yeah, okay. So I think this is a subject which is very close to my heart. I've been involved with this for quite a while now. And I think, like you say, hearing health is incredibly important to everyone. And I don't think a lot of people realize how much their ears can be impacted. So what we have introduced here is actually following some WHO guidelines about hearing health and about how much noise you should be exposed to. Of course, the difficulty is you don't want people thinking it's going to turn down my volume when I don't want it to be turned down. So what we have here is an app that supports these, and it has this section called Safe Listening. And essentially, it does a few things. One of them is it educates you about the risks of listening to too much exposure to sound. But another one is it will limit the sound based upon your request. So in other words, you can set it so that it will, after a certain period of time, it knows you've been exposed to too much sound via your headphones, it will warn you or it will lower down the volume. And it will keep track of this information over time. So there's lots of really useful benefits to sort of educate and help people protect their ears over a period of time.
And what other features do you think improve the ease of use and accessibility, particularly for blind and partially sighted users of Sony headphones?
Wow, yeah, I mean, that's a good question. There's quite a few things that have been introduced to make life easier and to sort of skip some of the sections. Like, let me give you an example. So if for example, you want to play your music from your phone. Your phone is in your pocket. What we do with our headphones now is we introduce a feature called Quick Access. And the idea of this is you just put in the earbuds or you put on the headphones, headband or whatever it is. And depending on which model, you might tap it or you might hold down a button depending on which model. And what it will do is it will launch the app directly on your phone and immediately launch the music. So in other words, you don't need to find your phone and find the music service and etc. All you have to do is put in your earbuds, press the button or tap the button, and you're into your music and off you go. And there's a lot of different features like that. Another one which is really nice recently is, this is very, very new, in fact, introduced on the Link Buds, we've got some specific Sony voice commands that we've added. Now, the reason we've done that is we do have support for voice assistant. So maybe you use Google Assistant. And that's really great because it means you can put in your earbuds and you can say, hey, Google, And your earbuds will react to your, you know, to the wake word, as we call it, and you'll be able to talk to your Google Assistant via your earbuds without even taking the phone out of your pocket. So that's really easy. But we've introduced this Sony extra step because you can't do everything with Voice Assistant. You might be able to load music you want with Google, for example. You might be able to load the music or something like that. But for example, turning on and off the ambient sound mode or turning up and down the volume of your earbuds, that it doesn't have that function. So what we've done is we've introduced a Sony voice command section that allows you to control your earbuds or your headphones just with your voice. So you put them on and you might say, well, the wake word, as we call it, is hey headphones. You say hey headphones, it will then make a beep sound to say I've heard you, and then you can make the command and it will automatically do that. So you don't actually have to get your phone out, you don't even have to tap on the headphones, you can control them just with your voice.
How early in the design process of a product like Linkbuds is Sony thinking about the needs of blind and partially sighted people?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. So I suppose I can answer that in two parts, really. So firstly, in terms of development, what Sony has recently done, say from FY25, so this year, financial year forward, all products will go through a specific process to recognize and understand and check for needs of accessibility, and that they will all go through that same process now going forwards. So that's really exciting, just looking forwards. But actually, from the other side, when you look at what's happened with the products over the last few years, you can really see it happening in place already in terms of these convenient controls and improved ambient sound and even this voice commands. All of these things are ramping up more and more. And a great example also is the safe listening feature that we've added in as well. We saw it start on one model, and over the years now it's got to the point when it's on the vast majority of the models. So I think, yeah, so in a sense, yes, if you look at the range already, you can see this happening and it's really exciting. But like I say, it is good to know that officially from 2025, all products will go through a review to check for accessibility, to work with people with accessibility needs, to understand how we can make the products better for their needs.
You touched on voice assistants a little bit earlier. Lots of blind and partially sighted people, we use services like Google Assistant or Alexa. Is there anything that you've done specifically to ensure integration with those voice assistants?
Yeah, so I mean, again, yeah, I sort of touched on this area, but just to explain it a bit better, you won't always get a wake word, a hot word, if you like, with these. You sometimes have to tap headphones with different products in the past. But what we're doing with our Sony headphones is to offer a wake word, so you can just do it immediately. You don't have to find the phone. You can just say, hey, Google or Alexa or something like that. But also, it's about optimizing the earbuds for the service. And that sounds strange, but what you'll notice, if you have some headphones or earbuds that have a microphone and are able to Bluetooth to your smartphone, the majority of them will essentially be able to control Alexa or Google because it will use your microphone in the headphones and it will send it to the phone. But if it's not optimized, you might have quite a slow, clunky operation, and like I said, you certainly won't be able to activate it with your voice. But with the Sony ones, you've got the voice activation, the optimized for fast use. So I think, yeah, they're pretty good for voice, and that with the Sony voice assistant on top, it's pretty good to control with your voice.
Where are we in terms of audio cues and voice output, you know, when you're using the Linkbuds? So, you know, when you switch them on or you want to check the battery and things like that, I mean, do you get all that information audibly?
Yeah. So we have lots of different audio cues. This is an interesting sort of balancing act, because actually if we go back a couple of models ago, we had a lot of spoken cues that some users felt went on a bit too long. So it might say something, auto ambient sound mode now connected or something like that, and they feel like, can you just make that shorter? So what we do now is audio cues that sound very distinct from each other. So for example, if you switch on ambient sound mode, there's a very specific, I was about to try and sing it then, but I'm not going to, there's a very specific sort of jingle sound, which is very clearly opening up the sound. It's got this sort of opening feel to it. And then it's kind of got an inverse sound with this other jingle, which very clearly shows closing the sound. So you have things like that. But you also have, for example, if you put the headphones into pairing mode, you put them on, you hold down the pairing, it will say Bluetooth pairing mode. You know, so it will tell you where you are. some of the cues you'll have to learn because it's not always spoken, but I still think from the cues that it plays, it should be pretty clear what's going on.
Just talk us through that connectivity process with Bluetooth pairing. How do you get set up? How do you get, you know, you get these out of the box and you want to pair with your phone or other device, what are the steps to do that? How accessible is that?
Yeah, I mean, that's so it does depend on the product. So take for our headphones, for example. Headband headphones, what you do, there's almost always a button. It's normally on the left ear cup, which, by the way, you can identify with the little dot. There's a little sort of a dot on the left ear cup or left earbud of all of the Sony headphones, so you can identify which one's which. But on the left ear cup, you've normally got a little power button, and that power button is also the Bluetooth pairing button. So you hold it down while wearing the headphones, and you will hear a Bluetooth pairing mode, and you know that you are in and you are running. In terms of then connecting, if you're using iOS, it's just the normal pairing procedure. Once it's in pairing mode, you just pair it through the iOS device as you would normally. If you're using Android, you can do that, but you have an additional benefit, which is something called fast pair, which basically means you just put the headphones or earbuds into pairing mode, and the Android phone or Google phone, whatever it is, a message will just simply pop up saying, do you want to pair to this device? And you just say yes, and it will bypass the whole settings menu, etc. For the earbuds, it's similar, but the difference is on the case. So normally on the back of the case, you've got a little button. It's quite easy to find. It's normally next to the USB input. The way that you pair our earbuds is you have to keep the earbuds inside the case, you open the case, and you hold down the pairing button at 3 seconds or something like that, and it goes into pairing mode.
And that's a physical button that you can feel that depressed, and it's right next to the USB-C port.
Exactly, right next to it. You just hold it down a few seconds, and then it will enter pairing mode. And that's the same on almost all of our earbuds now. We did have some in the past that were slightly different when you'd hold down each earbud at the same time and things like that. But what we've seen over the last couple of years, at least, all of the ones that we've introduced have this button on the back. So it's like a tangible pairing button.
Mike, as we draw things to a close, are you able to share anything about how you expect the accessibility of these products to evolve going forward?
Oh, yeah, I mean, that's a great question. Obviously, there's only so much I can say and talk about what we're doing, partly because of not necessarily a preview on everything. But what I can say is like I mentioned before, there's a process in place to help with accessibility needs and to work with people who would benefit from such features. But we do also see features such as AuraCast coming in more and more. So let me just quickly explain what AuraCast is. So AuraCast is it's not a Sony technology, it's actually an industry technology, which, utilizing the Bluetooth LE technology, so this is getting a bit techie, but there is a new version of Bluetooth, which LE stands for low energy, and it means devices are able to connect, as you can imagine, at a low energy, but also for wide distances via and high speeds via Bluetooth. So AuraCast will use Bluetooth LE technology, and think of it like a kind of, it's sort of a broadcast. So maybe think of it a bit like a radio station that's playing. So you could take your headphones with AuraCast enabled, and you could walk into a certain location and hear audio cues about where you are, about things that are happening. I say AuraCast is an exciting technology that if you haven't heard of it yet, I would imagine over the next few years, you'll start to hear more and more of it. But what I would say at the moment is Sony already have introduced AuraCast on some of our earbuds. So we've got WF-1000X Mark V and the two LinkBuds models I've just told you about, LinkBuds Fit and LinkBuds Open. But I can say, in terms of future development, we will be looking to integrate AuraCast in more products and start also just to be talking about the benefits a little bit more to people going forwards, because I think it's a exciting technology and I think it will be something that will benefit a lot of people.
Well, and we look forward to sharing that with listeners as the technology develops. Mike Somerset, Personal Entertainment Product Manager with Sony Europe, thank you so much for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thanks, Dave. Thank you very much.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
We have had an email from Alan who writes, "Hi Tech Talk, are you able to give any advice about the best VPN to use with an iPhone to utilise the descriptions that are apparently available on the Meta Smart Glasses, or can these be accessed without a VPN?" So Alan's got another question. We'll come to that in a second. Jackie Brown, I know you were an early adopter of the Meta Ray-Bans VPNs. Do you still need that?
I haven't used it for a long time, actually, to be honest. I think the whole thing has become so confusing now. I got told by a couple of people recently, in fact, just literally a couple of days ago, that their glasses are working perfectly now and they're not running the VPN and they're getting the look and tell description when you speak to Meta. So I honestly, if you want to go with a VPN, I know there are ones that are free. So you could go for something like Windscribe that is accessible because that's the one I used. But there are lots of others out there. And I guess if you're looking for something free, you're just going to have to, you know, download one and try it and then see how you get on. But I've also heard that Meta are blocking people if they know that they're from another country like the UK and they're trying to use a VPN. So just be aware of that if you try it.
Yeah, mine has been all over the place. So I had, when I first got my Meta Ray-Bans just before Christmas, I did the thing of turning on the VPN and then that gave me the look and tell feature. And then about a week later, it went away. Yeah. And then I thought, I'm not using it every day. So I thought, I'll reset that later. I'd probably just need to turn the VPN back on, but you know, I'll deal with it in a bit. Kind of forgot all about it. And then a couple of days later, it just randomly came up and said, look and tell is now available in your region, and that was without a VPN. So that was, I thought, oh, brilliant, it's just here in the UK now. So that was working perfectly for, again, a week or two. Now it's disappeared and I can't get it back no matter what. The VPN, even
same.
The VPN
exactly
work.
The same thing happened to me. So, and I've just given up on the whole VPN thing now. I just use the glasses for what I, you know, for what they can do, and I just accept that, you know, the whole thing I think has been a bit of a faff on Meta's part, to be honest. It hasn't been, I don't think it's been explained to people properly or clearly enough, and there are a lot of people out there who feel the same, who've said, you know, there is a problem, and one week it works, the next week it doesn't. So I don't know where we are with it, to be honest.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you want to try free one, I've tried Windscribe as well, Alan. It sort of works. It's kind of accessible. I found it a little bit busy, that app, to be honest with you. I know that ExpressVPN is quite popular as well in the community.
Yeah, that is good as well, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, of course, there are others out there. So recommendations for Alan, very welcome. But even with a VPN, it may or may not work. And you may find, Alan, the kind of the look and tell sort of description goes away again after some days. So the other question that Alan has is, what else are the team using their smart glasses for at the moment? Jackie?
Well, when I want some you know, input from GPS apps like Voice Vista, that's what I would use it for primarily. It's also pretty good, actually, if you want to call somebody and you need both hands free to ask them to help you with something. That's another good use case of them. The sound for music is not bad on them, but if I was wanting to listen to music, it would be a proper pair of headphones, I guess. But but they do serve their purpose. And if you think of them in a way as replacements for your bone conduction headphones, I think they're as good as the bone conduction headphones for getting around, you know, rather than having to buy a pair of bone conduction. But at the same time, it just depends what you want to use them for.
Callum?
So I'm using mine, as Jackie said, yeah, mainly for the audio. I'm really not keen on them at all for music, to be honest, but for listening to podcasts and or audiobooks and keeping your ears free, or for the directions from your GPS app, they are really, really good. I like it because the call quality, as you mentioned, is fantastic. Like, I had to take a call the other day while I was walking out and about, and I was walking next to quite a busy area. There was a lot of traffic around, a lot of, you know, lorries and buses driving past, because it was kind of near a main road. And the other person on the call could hear me fine. I mean, they could hear a bit of background noise, obviously. But if I used something like my AirPods, which I used to use out and about, they would have real trouble hearing me. Whereas on the Meta Ray-Bans, I was shocked. Like, they could hear me very clearly. So that's good.
Yeah. Yeah, they are good for call quality.
Yeah, surprisingly good. I love them for, I've said this before about just easily taking photos and videos as well. Because all you have to do is just look in the right direction, press that little camera button, or you can even do it by voice command if you've got, if you need both hands free. And you can be fairly confident, as long as you're facing the right way, you can be fairly confident that you're getting a good quality shot as well. So I love that. And of course, if you need any assistance from, like, on a video call from friends or family members, or Be My Eyes, they're amazing for that as well. So, to be honest, I'm not too fussed about not having the AI, not having the look and tell features.
Not really.
Because I don't think it was that good in the first place, to be honest. It's going to get better, obviously, but it just wasn't really, it's not designed for us, you know. And so the descriptions you get were a bit too brief, a bit too summarized. But I think they've got so many more uses beyond that. So I'm not really missing it, to be honest.
Did either of you struggle with a bit of a delay? So I found with using VoiceOver, it wasn't too bad navigating around apps. But if I tried to text somebody, I found the delay a bit frustrating.
Yeah, there's a bit of a lag. Is it latency they call that?
Yeah.
There is a bit of a lag when you try to type and stuff like that on it. I've noticed that. But other than that, I think, you know, I think they do have their place, and I think there's a lot more to come of wearable technology. And I think we've all also got to remember that this is a mainstream product and was never designed for blind people to use. So I guess if you take all the VPN and all the kind of look and tell feature out of the equation, then they do have their place.
All right, Alan, thank you so much for your email. And we're keen to hear from you. Do you have the Meta Ray-Bans? How are you using them? Do you find that they're just collecting dust in a drawer, or have you found a killer application? Let us know. techtalk@rnib.org.uk.
Today we're joined by Cornel Amariai, CEO of Dot Lumen, to discuss their glasses for the blind. Cornel, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Can you very simply tell us what the Dot Lumen glasses are, please?
So the Dot Lumen glasses are basically a self-driving car that, rather than driving on the road, it actually guides people with visual impairment. It is designed to mimic what the guide dog or the service dog for the blind is doing, but with a very important difference. If a guide dog works by pulling your hand, avoiding you from obstacles, taking you to your destination, stopping you at a crossing, keeping you on the sidewalk, etc., the Dot Lumen glasses, they do the same, but they don't pull your hand as the guide dog. We actually pull your head. We actually use haptics on your head, so you actually feel how this device is pulling your head, taking you around obstacles, keeps you on the sidewalk, keeps you on a crossing, helps you understand the world, and takes you to your destination. So that's very, very briefly what we do. We build self-driving cars for the pedestrian side.
So where did the idea for this come from?
First of all, I was born in a family of people with disabilities. I'm the only member in my family which doesn't have a disability. And after I had a career in the automotive space where I worked on self-driving and on a lot of innovations in the car business, I said, hey, we can use this technology for something else. So 4 years ago, we started a company. There were 7 of us back then. Now we're 50 people working on this. One of the largest, the largest research and development project in Romania at this point. And that's how we started, and this is where we are.
Interesting that you say you've got a lot of connection to blind or partially sighted people through your family. Has it always been important at Dotlumen to have people with lived experience of sight loss being involved in it every step of the way to make sure that it's authentic?
Definitely. I mean, even looking at my colleague, we have colleagues with visual impairment. We continuously test with our friends at this point. I mean, we're counting 400 blind plus people with severe visual impairment or blind who are part of our testing groups. And we do that continuously. So everything we design, we test, and then we adjust. And in the end, we do this enough times until we get a product.
You've mentioned already using some of the same technology found in self-driving cars and the artificial intelligence that goes into that. There's loads and loads of news, particularly in the tech space, about AI and all the wonderful things it can do over the past 2 years or so. How important is it to be using a technology like that to benefit people rather than as a business thing?
Your question goes into two possible answers, and I'll give both of them because they're interlaced. So the number one value of this company is make meaning, not money. That's our number one value. This is why we started the company. We started the company not caring about making money, but caring about building products which help people. And by not caring about the money, we raised more funds than any other startup in this region, for example, any other deep tech startup in this region. That's my first thing. But strictly related to AI, what we build is heavily based on AI. It's only possible because of AI. But now AI is a huge field. AI is an absolutely huge field. And what we do in AI is, you know, it's not what other famous models are doing. We do some very specific tasks with AI, which are only possible because we made them possible. Whenever before this was any models doing what we do on a wearable device, even more on a wearable device, which guides people with visual impairment. And, you know, for us, AI and the marriage of AI and other classical computer science aspects and computer vision especially is what is making us able to build a product which nobody built before in order to solve a shortage of mobility solutions for the visually impaired. So we love AI. We understand its limitations. It's a good moment for AI. However, what we do is not in the direction for what AI is famous in the last couple of years. It's more towards computer vision, more towards how we understand images real time, very, very quickly with a very high safety margin. While typical AI is not very safe and definitely is not very fast. You know, when you go on a large model like the famous ones, ChatGPT or other ones, you get very slow answers, you get them very inaccurately, etc. What we do is incredibly fast. I'm talking milliseconds. And it's incredibly accurate. I mean, 99% plus accuracy.
Now, you're not too long back from CES. How was that as an experience? And also getting feedback to the Dotlumen glasses as well.
This is our second CES. And CES, I remember the first one. It was a life-changing experience. And I think also the second one was a company-changing experience because so many things happened there. And with proper planning, I mean, myself personally, I have around 300 meetings during CES, both this one, which happened less than a month ago, and the previous one from last year. We learned so many things. Gosh, where do we even start? Ranging from people who have tested, people with visual impairment. Not that many knew. That's something which I'm a bit not disappointed, but it's an observation. Most people with visual impairment tested last year, and most others in the visual impairment accessibility space tested last year, and they also tested this year, and they're mostly the same people. I found very few new faces in during this CES compared with the last CES. When I speak about the space of assistive technology for the visually impaired. When I think of other things, gosh, so many things, ranging from how we can use this in aviation, how we can use this in military. We even won a award from the DOD, from the American DOD. So a lot, a lot of interesting conversations, interesting meetings, optimizations, production, market entry internationally, reuse of the technology. CES, it takes 3 months to recover from a CES done properly.
My final question for you, Cornell, is how can our listeners find out more about what you do and also what's coming up for you in the not too distant future?
Two directions which I can point you. One would be our website, dotlumen.com, or just search dotlumen, so D-O-T Lumen, on social media. We are present on basically all platforms. And that's where you can find more details. And the main things which are happening in the company, there are a billion of them, but the main things is that we're putting the product on the market in Eastern Europe, where we're from. In the following very few months, we're in a regulatory testing, new developments there basically every day. Then we're expanding market by market. So we're starting here in Romania, where we're from, and we're going market by market towards the West. The country which you represent is not that far in the West. So be ready.
Exciting times ahead for Dotlumen then.
Indeed they are.
Cornell Amarai, CEO of Dotlumen, thank you so much for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
You're so much, David.
Thanks again to David Hogg, learning more about those smart glasses. But on the subject of guide dogs, would technology ever be a viable alternative, particularly for somebody who perhaps would struggle to care for a guide dog? Well, I'm joined by Hubert Pavarkovic. Turns out he might have a guide dog. Callum Stoneman, who previously had a guide dog. Natalie, have you ever thought about a guide dog?
I have a slight problem of being terrified of dogs.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. So actually, if there were a technological solution for somebody who is scared of dogs, that might be the way to go. But Callum, Hubert, you have or had guide dogs. Can you imagine a world where technology might be a viable replacement?
I think we're far away from that yet, to be honest. I think there's technology solutions that offer you various bits that can possibly be similar to what a guide dog might offer. But I think we are a long while away yet from a solution that could be considered as something that could be provided as an equal alternative to a guide dog, I'd say.
Such as?
I think when it comes to, you know, possible solutions, I think devices such as Glide, they're kind of slowly giving you a, you know, something that could come close. I think it's still not fully there, but, you know, devices like that could be quite close to providing you similar features, but maybe aren't yet at the stage where they can provide you with every single element that a guide dog can offer. But I think these sorts of devices like Glide or, you know, they have, you know, capabilities that could potentially enhance in the future to be able to act as an alternative for people who may not be able to have a guide dog in their life for whatever reason, whether it's fear of dogs, whether it's, as you mentioned, not being able to care for a dog as well. I mean, you know, I've tried devices that are good at obstacle detection, which again could give you parts of what a guide dog can do. But I think, you know, we are a while away yet from a one all-in-one solution, and I think devices like Glide come close, but I think we're still a while away yet.
Callum Stoneman, you're on this journey, right? Because you had a guide dog and you've been playing with smart canes. I mean, how's that going?
Yeah, it's going all right, but it just makes me nervous when we hear these sort of claims like, oh, this device could replace a guide dog or replace the white cane. Because I just think there's some elements that I think, yeah, technology, I mean, Glide is an interesting one. I know Hubert's brought them up as well. I don't want to focus too much on them, but they're the best example I can think of that they're working so closely with the community on everything that they're developing that I think, I mean, I'm still skeptical, but I think they could potentially, I think they're onto something. I think we're a few years away from it being a full replacement. But I mean, you know, we never thought, if you'd have said to me about maybe 5 years ago that we'd be able to get really, really detailed image descriptions and ask questions and get a response back in the space of about 2 seconds, I probably wouldn't. I'd have said, no, come on, we're not going to get that for a long time yet. And then suddenly it just appeared. So, I mean, you never know what's coming. For me, there's just some elements of having a guide dog that technology just won't replace. I mean, I still do, on places that I'm unfamiliar with, or when you're out and about and there's a change, you know, like say it could be something as small as there's a car parked in the way of where you need to be. So you've got to kind of go out and go around the car and go off track a little bit and then get yourself back on track. That sort of thing makes me so anxious. You know, I put off this impression, I think, to a lot of people of just being really, really confident out and about. And for the most part, I am. But there is little things that come up that are out of your control that just really set the anxiety going. And for me, having the dog there was a bit of a kind of calming influence. You know, the dog, I mean, my last dog was pretty calm. Obviously, I don't know what my second dog's going to be like, but I'm hoping for a similar kind of thing. And that was, you know, she would be quite calm, and she would, I know guide dogs aren't supposed to do this, but it almost felt like she would kind of take control a little bit sometimes. You know, she knew where she was going. That's something that technology, you're just not going to get that. You know, just, I don't know how to describe it. Just having her there was a comfort.
Mm. That bond with your guide dog is more than just stopping at steps.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
You kind of, like, the bond you have with your guide dog and the emotional side of guide dog ownership, you know, the technology can certainly provide alternatives when it comes to the navigational side, sure, but I think there's that bond between you and the dog emotionally that, you know, it's your companion and also someone that does care about you, and, you know, I don't really think that can be replaced by any technology.
Mm. Natalie, what do you reckon? Are you like me, just going to stick with a trusty white cane?
Yeah, to be fair, my cane's actually purple and pink.
good for you.
Nice. Yeah, there's also an element of the signalling to other people factor. And I know some people actually that upsets them, but actually the reality is it's really helpful when people spot you coming with a cane and move out the way. You know, it's not just the navigational side of it. I'm also always a bit wary of, we say it in our normal day-to-day lives, technology is great when it works and it's a complete pain when it doesn't. So I would really, really hate to be out walking somewhere and for the battery to die, or for it to give me duff information and not to have a way of verifying that. So in the case of things like, you know, other wearable technology like the Meta Ray Bans, even though we just said they're maybe not as good as they could be yet, is using them in conjunction with something else. So I'm sure, Callum, you're maybe exploring things with other tech at the moment, but am I right in saying that you're not just going out relying solely on the tech, you're maybe using a cane as well as?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you never rely solely on it.
Yeah, and I think it's absolutely brilliant that people are doing these things and this technology's coming, but like we've just said, I don't think it's there yet. And sometimes you can't beat, well, in this case you're talking about dogs, but sometimes you can't beat a bit of real-life interaction. Sometimes I don't want to use my phone. Sometimes I just want to ask a human.
There we are. Well, let us know what you think about that intersection between technology and more traditional mobility aids like the guide dog or cane. Keen to hear about the challenges and opportunities from your perspective. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. But for now, Natalie Curran, Callum Stoneman and Hubert Parkovich, thank you very much.
Time now on Tech Talk to take a look at bone conduction headphones. So we've talked about these quite a few times on the show. We've talked about outdoor headphones and the Shox Open Run Pros, which are headphones people often use for outdoor activities or walks, or just simply to use outdoors when walking anywhere in order to still be able to hear the traffic or everything else going on around you, which when you're walking with a cane or guide dog is still quite important. Today, we will look at the Shox OpenCom 2 headphones. I've mentioned them already on Tech Talk, so I'm not going to mention everything I've said already, but I want to give you a brief description of the headset, tell you what comes with it, and of course we're going to do the all-important microphone test, which, as I mentioned, is quite a highlight for me with these headphones. What we've got here in front of me is the Shox OpenCom 2 headphones. They are in their carry case, which is very nice. So I found most of the new products from Shox come with a nice carry case included. It's nice and thick and protective. And certainly keeps your headphones safe. And it's also not that big. So the carry case is not fairly bulky. It has a little bit of bulk to it because it has to store these headphones in, but it can fit in most small bags, and in the case of my work bag, it can fit in there quite easily. Let me first of all open the case for you. So you've got two halves of the case. It opens kind of like a book. And on the left-hand side, you've got the case lid. And this is what I like about the case for the OpenCom 2s as opposed to the carry case for the OpenRun Pros. It's a small difference, but it does make a difference to me. There's a Velcro within the lid of the carry case for the OpenCom 2s. And you can use this Velcro to keep the charging cable in the case, which is quite nice because in this particular case with these headphones, and same really for the OpenRun Pros, the cable is magnetic, so you don't have to get the magnetic cable included. You can get a USB-C cable, but I quite like the magnetic cable for many reasons. One, because if you end up knocking it, the cable will just simply disconnect from the headphones and will not kind of pull the headphones off the table. Because of the little Velcro in this case, which can keep the cable within the lid, is the fact that you won't lose the cable because it's proprietary. No other cable will basically work in this case to charge these headphones. You don't really want to lose it. So therefore, this is the ideal solution to it. With the case for the OpenRun Pros, it doesn't have a Velcro to keep the cable in the case, so you're kind of relying and hoping that the cable will not fall out of the case while you're opening the case to try and take out the headphones. Moving back to the other side of the case, you've got a nestled in Shox OpenCom 2 headset, which is securely slotted in. I'm going to remove it from its compartment, shut the case and put it to the side. Now, if you have seen bone conduction headphones before, most of them follow quite a similar design principle where you have a headband that will go around the back of your neck and hooks that will go on your ears, and with the two headphones resting in front of your ear on your cheekbone, which is where the sound will come through, which not only makes it safer because they don't go directly into your ears, it also allows you to obviously hear the background around you, which is one of the main selling points of bone conduction. Let's describe you this one. It's a black headset in this particular case. Then on one side of your ear, you will have a little control unit with two buttons, volume up and volume down. Most buttons on these headsets will have multiple functions to them. So one button is used for pairing, the other button is also used for powering off, for example. On the same part of the headset, protruding from the right ear pad, as I'd like to call them, is a microphone, which you twist clockwise so it's in front of you when you are wearing the headset. What's good about this microphone is, apart from how good it is, which we will show you in a minute, it's got a mute button on it, which works universally. So you can actually mute the microphone when you're not needing to speak to make sure people don't hear any noise from your end. And you can then turn the microphone anti-clockwise again to fold it, and it will lie alongside the volume controls. On the other side, it's fairly similar. You've got a headphone pad with a hook that goes on your ear. No buttons apart from one, which is on the headphone itself, which is the play pause button, but it can be used to summon your voice assistant, i.e. Siri, Google Assistant, any other. It can also be used to answer and hang up phone calls. So it's quite simple, not much else to it. That is the headset. You've got the carry case and you've got the magnetic cable to charge it. Now, the important part with Bluetooth headphones that I often mentioned is that microphones can often be a problem. I've used many Bluetooth headphones throughout my time, and most of them had the same recurring issue. The microphone is simply not very good. So if you record a voice message, for example, on WhatsApp, people often say, I can't understand what you're saying. The microphone doesn't sound great. Well, This is not the case with these headphones, as you are about to find out.
So this recording is currently being done using the microphone on the OpenCom 2 Shox headphones. And I have to say, I'm quite impressed with this microphone because you try many headphones at a similar price range, which in this case is £159.95, and quite often the microphones on these tend to be below par when it comes to the quality you'd expect for that sort of product. But with these particular headphones, I find the microphone on these is very much quite a high quality standard, and I think quite impressive at noise cancelling as well as providing clear quality during calls, which I think is quite important in an office environment, because then you get the best of both worlds. You get a very clear microphone, and you also get headphones that allow you to hear what's going on in the office and not feel isolated from everything else. But also then, if you need to join a Teams call or a call or using any other video platform, you can do that too. So that is the microphone on these headphones. Let's switch back to the studio.
And that was the microphone in the OpenCom 2 headphones. As you can probably tell, fairly decent. If you have used Bluetooth headphones before, you know that isn't always the case. But hopefully that has shown you a little bit of what you can expect with these headphones, which therefore adds potential for adding a much better sounding microphone. So let us know what you think. Maybe you've got a better alternative even for an office headset that is Bluetooth. Of course, speaking of Bluetooth, latency can be an issue. So by latency, we often mean, you know, how quickly a screen reader responds and the computer responds to you pressing keys. It is there a little bit. Is it a problem? I think it depends what you're doing on your computer, to be honest. I found it doesn't affect the speed I do things when I do admin work, or emails, web browsing, typing up documents. However, it's something I wouldn't probably use for audio editing. I think for audio editing that I do quite frequently, I would always use a wired headset, just because then you need no latency whatsoever in order to be precise with what you need to edit. So yes, that is the Shox OpenCom 2 bone conduction headset.
That's it from Tech Talk this time. Great to have your company as ever. Stay in touch, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. But from myself, Dave Williams, Natalie Curran, Jackie Brown, Hubert Pavarkovich and Callum Stoneman, bye for now.
Bye.
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 Bye for now.
Bye-bye.